Gaming Uncensored is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.
Controlling transmission.
Divided by 1,000 miles of barren wasteland, two men mysteriously linked by alien technology on a podcasting mission to boldly deliver video game news and views directly to your brain. This is Gaming Uncensored. Now, your Gaming Uncensored guides, the dynamic duo, the video game gurus, a man on wheels, and a Yeti with a modem, Jamie and Tommy.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. How you doing? My name is Jamie Jordan, and this is a brand new episode of Gaming Uncensored, and I am 1 year closer to death. And of course, Tommy's sitting over there. What's up, dude?
Happy birthday, my friend.
I don't know how we ended up doing this on my birthday, but I don't know if this is going to be cool or not. So let's tell the folks what we got on the show today.
We've got a lot of Final Fantasy VII Remake, honestly. That's the thing we're going to be heavily focused on. If you would like to see the other stuff that we didn't get to talk about, because I'm guessing we're going to miss a lot of it, go by GamingUncensored.com. That includes the new PlayStation controller. I imagine we'll talk about that for a little bit, because that's kind of the big news of the week. The latest Switch firmware update. I mean, we're kind of digging here. There's not a ton of news this week.
Apparently, that update's pretty good.
It's
pretty good.
Yeah, and lots of free game options for you. I'll make sure we get those in too, to tell you about some free game options that are out there for these times, because these times kind of suck. So free games are nice. So, go by the show notes, gaminguncensored.com. There is some good stuff over there. But we're going to talk Final Fantasy Remake a lot.
And I feel really special because it's the middle of the day on a Wednesday, and you're technically supposed to be at work.
Yes.
And there's like an hour in here where you're technically still working, and you got to go back to work. But here we are doing a show. And so it's not exactly normal, and I'm kind of digging it. So
yeah, me too. And it's your birthday, so why not, right?
Yeah,
celebrate in style during the quarantine.
Cause I'm freaking old. at this point, I think we've discussed this. I don't think either one of us, the age thing is not what it was when we were younger, because we're both feeling it. But you know, it's kind of one of those things where you look up and you're like, okay, I was 20 like 2 seconds ago. What happened?
Isn't that the truth?
I have absolutely no idea what happened. All I know is I'm kind of one of those old actresses where the looks are the last thing to go, and I am totally paranoid about the Jay Leno chin. I am. It drives my mother crazy because I'm looking in the mirror. I'm like, I gotta pay attention to what I'm eating. She's like, why? And I'm like, because I'm in danger of developing this chin. That can't happen. We haven't even done anything yet. We got like years of like video podcast and live stuff. I can't look like a complete wreck yet. So this getting old is not fun.
Yeah, no, that's fair. we're not stopping it though. So enjoy it while we have it, I suppose.
Right. Absolutely. All that means that we got to say thanks to the Patreon guys before we jump in here. Those guys are literally keeping us in business for absolutely nothing. We don't know why. We don't understand. And so thank you guys for doing all that you do.
Absolutely. Those guys are Cabbage Jose, Narc Duff, Josh Hector, Spider, Spencer, Kavash, Chad, Zeke, Chris Brigham, and Sam. Echoing what Jamie said, thank you guys a billion times over.
I made an executive decision this week, and then we're going to get into the big game of the week. I think our next upgrade needs to be, if we can get it done before Cyberpunk, I think our next upgrade needs to be monitors. Because I'm looking at what Sam bought, and I'm a little jealous.
Yes.
Like, I've seen that Predator before, and I've heard that's a really good monitor. Now I kind of want it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've kind of been just looking every now and then for a few months now on that point, because I think it would make a big difference. I really do. I think you're right. I think that's the next thing that would really make things, I don't know, more enjoyable is not the right word. Just, you know, just awesome. Just good.
Can I ask you a favor?
Huh?
Because you are like the ultimate shopper. So if you find a deal that looks good to you, and you buy one, just buy another one. Like, fair. I'll pay you for it. Just buy two. Because you're always the guy that's like, yeah, I got this $4 monitor for like $25, and it's like, I wish I'd have known that. So if you find one that you like, just buy two, and I'll get you back.
Yeah, that's fair. We could definitely do that.
Yeah.
So, all that said, should we talk about Final Fantasy
for a while? I'm installing, because those that don't really enjoy this game are gonna hate the show.
Yeah, it's. I'm glad you guys showed up. We'll see you next week if you don't want to hear Final Fantasy VII, because it's gonna be. We'll get to some news. We'll talk about some other stuff here in a bit, but we definitely have Final Fantasy VII to talk about, in part because it's finally here, and it's been literally 15 years since the first tease we got of this, the first kind of little tech demo thing that said this might be a possibility, and it's been kind of percolating for a while since then. And on top of that, we're getting older, but this is a game of our childhood. Like, you know, like, this is something that's so nostalgic for us. It just, yeah, it's going to get a lot of attention from us. And so at this point, I've got, I don't know, 4 hours in, something like that. Still very, very early in the game, and we'll talk about that here in just a bit. So far, I don't think any massive surprises about it, especially since we got to play a demo. That was nice, just to know kind of what you were getting into. But I'm really digging it. That's where I'll start. We'll get into all the details, but I just want to lay out on the front end that I'm enjoying it in a way maybe I didn't realize I would, if that makes any sense, in that it's nostalgic-ish because it is Final Fantasy VII, and I know these characters and I know this world. But honestly, it's so fresh and it feels so new to me that I feel like I'm more enjoying it as a new game that has kind of echoes of nostalgia than I'm enjoying it as purely a nostalgic experience. Okay. Like, it really does feel like a new game to
me. You know why? It feels like a new game because there's a whole lot of stuff in there right now that was not there in the first game. And I'm the stuff that gets me, that is getting me, is the copious amounts of flashbacks, of phantoms, of just weird crap that's happening to Cloud that happened in the first game, but they didn't have any way really to visually represent that. So there's a whole lot of new crap in here that was not possible when we played the first game. And because of that, it feels so new.
Yes.
It's nuts.
100%. And that's what this experience is to me right now, I think, more than anything else, is that this is Square executing a narrative that wasn't possible 25 years ago, right? Like, they just didn't have the capability to tell this story as deeply as they can tell this story now. And so you're absolutely right. What the experience has been so far for me, more than gameplay, more than all that, and we'll get into all that as we talk through some of this stuff. But it's just fleshing out that story in a way that it was just not fleshed out the first time through. And can we be really honest about something about Final Fantasy VII, the original, just really briefly? The story was ridiculously convoluted and not incredibly.
And it still is.
Oh, yeah, it still is. But not incredibly well executed, in part maybe because of translation issues or whatever. I've heard a million different things about this. But, like, and it's going to get worse as we move through this, because we know at least the kind of bare-bone basics of what this story is supposed to be. It's going to get really, really confusing. But it was a game, I think, that I love so much, not because of the story originally, but in some ways in spite of the story. The story was fascinating. The characters are always what really made it for me. Just love the characters of Final Fantasy
world.
VII.
In the world, absolutely, right.
Yes. But the actual plot of the story of the original Final Fantasy VII was always just, especially once you got outside of Midgar, once you got into kind of the bigger world and the whole thing just got super weird and... Right. It was a bizarre, weird story that I never really grasped all the way, but always the intro portion was, you know, the first disc of the original Final Fantasy VII was just so good. And so the fact that they're able to flesh that out more and just put more context to everything, more depth to these characters in so many ways, I really, really appreciate. You know, like, that's the part that it's kind of nostalgic, but it's also incredibly new and fresh, because I'm like, I'm reintroduced to these characters. Like, I know who they're supposed to be in a general sense, but now I'm really getting to see them in a new light, in a new way that I haven't.
Well,
25 years.
And I'm going to say that you and I are going to be different than everybody else, because right now I'm currently loving all the characters. I like the voice acting. Voice acting is pretty good on everybody except Barrett. I cannot stand Barrett. I can't stand it. Like,
yeah.
If he did the tough guy thing all the way through, I'd be good with that. But he has this thing where he does the tough guy thing and he's screaming, and then he turns into an extra from Queer Eye the Straight Guy and starts talking about, you know, the planet, the screaming, and it's hurting. And it's like, shut up, dude. Just shut up and shoot something. I can't stand that guy. And I wish that they had written him differently, because it's awful.
I'm awful. I'm interested to see how he does going forward, because we're past the first little bit of the, like, reactor and all that stuff. We're to the slums, and he just kind of disappears for a while at the slums. I haven't picked him back up yet, and so he obviously is going to play a huge role going forward. We know Barrett in Final Fantasy, and so whatever. So we're going to get much more of him. I don't disagree. It's the one. It's because it's so stereotyped, and we knew that going in because we'd already seen this, but it just feels so stereotyped that it's just, yeah. I agree. I like every other voice actor, and even the voice actor himself, I don't have a huge problem with. I don't like how the character's written. I think that's the bigger thing. I think you're spot on with that. It feels like they try to stereotype him while at the same time giving him this, you know, like, Earth guy thing to, like, also not have him stereotyped. It just results in this weird, like, disconnect, and it's, yeah, I don't know. Like, I get it. Like, I understand it's the whole idea behind Avalanche in the first game and whatever, but it just doesn't. Yeah. That one doesn't land well.
And I mean, it's bad. Like I am completely and totally identifying with Cloud at this point, because he's looking at him going, dude, just shut up. I'm gonna, if you don't shut up, I'm gonna stab you. Give me my money and let me, like, I can't take this. Just shut the hell up.
Yeah.
That's where Cloud's at, and it's perfect.
It's a different dichotomy. Maybe I just don't remember Final Fantasy VII this way, or in my head it was different, because voice acting makes such a difference, right? It's kind of like reading a book and watching a movie. Like, when you read a book, like, all the characters have their own voices in your head, their own looks in your head and everything else. And then when you go and like, watch a movie, you're like, oh, that's not what I thought that character sounded like. That's what I'm experiencing with Cloud, I think, more so than any character so far in Final Fantasy VII Remake, is that he's a douche, man. Like, he's just a punk.
I love it.
But in my remembering of the original Final Fantasy VII, like, he was just kind of this loner, like, you know, black sheep, whatever, you know, like, obviously all the story stuff that's going to get into why his history is as weird and screwed up as it is. But it was always, to me, he was more of like a quiet, like, insular, you know, like, that was his, like, outworking of his pain. And in this game, he's just like a punk to everybody, right? Like, he just is a douche, and it just throws me off.
I swear to you, I love it. I think it's great, because the reason I think it's great is because Baron's doing all his ranting and all his crap. And Cloud's looking at all these people going, I could kill all of you right now. Like, I could just drop you all right now and just walk off. Like, do you want my help or not? That's kind of like how I'm feeling. And I like it. Because that's kind of how I'm feeling with the rest of Avalanche. And the fact, yeah, I got to talk about this. Because I love Breaking Bad, right?
Yep.
And the fact that Wedge's voice is Badger from, yep. I don't know that guy's name.
Something. I had to look it up because I was like, that's Badger.
That's fantastic.
But the fact that Biggs isn't Skinny Pete throws me off, right? Like, the whole time I'm listening to Wedge talk and it's Badger. And then, like, Biggs talks, and he's got this, like, regular voice. I'm like, no, like, you're Skinny Pete. Like, you have to be Skinny Pete in this situation. Like, Wedge is obviously Badger. You're Skinny Pete, and your voice is wrong.
Like, I even started thinking about, okay, what if we made Barrett Bryan Cranston? Like, seriously, what if he had done that voice? How awesome!
It would have been better than his voice is now.
Yeah!
Yeah. I love that Wedge is Badger, though. I every time Wedge talks, it just makes me so happy. Like, I want to add Wedge to my party just so I could, like, have him go around and providing commentary.
And the thing is, this is the stuff that is drawing me into it. These little things are the things that are drawing me into it. But and I'm gonna dip into the negative just for a second.
Absolutely.
I watched this last night and a little bit on Sunday, and the feeling that I have in my brain is trepidation, because it's really good. It's really good. I really like it. But I don't think they can keep this up for 4 episodes or whatever. Like, let's say we get to the end of this episode and it's really good and we wait 2 years and the next episode's really bad. Like, all it takes is one bad one to blow it, right? And
yeah.
And so, like, I'm looking at this going, okay, I know that this part, this section, is going to end at some point, and then we have to wait. And I don't know if this is going to hold up.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Like, I'm trying really hard not to get too excited. Like,
yeah. And again, to go back to the original, I kind of have that feeling of the original game, right? Like, the talk about the story getting super convoluted and whatever happens later in the game is like discs 2 and 3, you know? That, like, disc 1 of Final Fantasy VII was like the perfect game. And then it kind of gets weird, you know? It's still brilliant, and there's so much good about the original Final Fantasy VII. Don't hear me wrong. Obviously, we love it. But it's not a perfect game, any more so than any other games I could think of. I'm trying to remember when we did our top 10s. I don't think Final Fantasy VII was in my top 10.
I don't think it was either, yeah.
Like, Final Fantasy VI is. That's my favorite game of all time. Final Fantasy VII is great. But, you know, like, again, it's more nostalgic for me than it's just a great game. And so I kind of have that anticipation anyway. You know what I'm saying? That maybe, like, they can kind of outperform my expectations on the later part of the game, and then it doesn't feel as bad.
I want to be all hyped up. I want to be all excited, but I got this thing in the back of my brain that's like, you can't really get excited because it's only the first episode and you don't know.
Yeah. That's 100% fair. Let's talk a little bit though about the fact that it is just the first episode, something we had talked about a lot kind of leading into it, that this, we already know this only takes place in Midgar, and like at the end of it, it is, you know, like them leaving Midgar, which there's a ton of game after that, obviously. And we were kind of, you know, the original Final Fantasy VII, you know, is as quick as a 40-hour game, if you want to go straight through it. This is supposed to be a 40-hour game, and it's just that first section. So we had talked about what are they doing to flesh that out. And so now we have some answers. We can start talking about that. One we've already talked about is just this fleshing out of the story. The fact that after the reactor blows up, that you have this whole scene that you just are like going through the streets, you know, and the first time you run into Aerith and the whole thing that happens there. But that it's just like, it's things that happened in the first game, but that happened, or in the original game, but that just happened quickly, you know,
it happened, but it happened mostly in text. Like, you didn't,
yes,
you didn't see all of this. I want to go back to Aerith for just a second, because I didn't understand the thing with the flowers until I saw the intro. Like, that was an iconic scene with her in the street with the flowers and one of them dropping and somebody stepping on one. That's always been a huge deal. But what they did at the beginning, showing what it was before the Mako reactors went up,
yeah,
and it was a farm community and all the stuff growing and all the stuff, and then the Mako reactors, that shows why she was so visibly upset when she dropped one and it got stepped on, because that's valuable. Like, that doesn't exist in this world because of the industrialization of what's going on. And so that intro section, which I can't remember, I'm sure maybe it was in the original game in some form or fashion, but I thought that intro section before we got to her was great. Because it explained, this is where we came from, and this is where we are now.
Yeah, 100% agree on that. I'm actually going to admit something that I've been kind of doing, playing through it for purposes like that. That one off the top of my head, I can't even recall right now. But I've actually had a playthrough of the original Final Fantasy VII pulled up from YouTube.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So that I can kind of compare it as we're going through and to see, you know, like, okay, what did they do here? How did that work out? You know, like, I just pulled it up just to be looking at it. And so the part where Cloud jumps onto the train like after they blow up the reactor was this iconic moment in the first game, and so it's super cool to see that again on the remake. But like that moment happens like 20 minutes into the first into the original game, you know, like it's so early, and so much of the like build up around that and everything is just automated stuff. Like you have an option to do a little fighting there if you want to, but you don't have to. And so that whole section is just like a few minutes long tops in game time, where was this whole fleshed out thing. And so stuff like that, where you get an opportunity to really compare it is super cool. That said, I don't remember that scene with Ares, if it is a thing, but you meet Tifa 30 minutes into the game.
Her that they show at the very beginning with the farmland and the people I'm talking when you first fire up the game, farmland and people and all that. I don't think that was in the original.
No.
And so that does a lot to explain, hey, we're in a very, very urbanized, very, very, very industrialized situation here, and the stuff that used to exist and having food grown and all of that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And they did a really nice job of showing that.
Yes. I agree with that 100%. And that's the way that it could be so cinematic, again, compared to the original, just with technology at this point. It's a whole different world of video games. The original I thought was incredibly cinematic 25 years ago. You know, like it would just blew my mind what that game could do. But this feels like, it's something I mentioned to you in a text, another topic we can transition into here as well. But this feels like Final Fantasy VII grew up with me, you know, like I was 15 years old, 14 years old, whatever it was, the first time that I played Final Fantasy VII. I'm now 36 years old playing this game again, and it feels like it's a game that makes sense for me as a 36 year old, not that makes sense for me as a 16 year old, whereas the original made sense for me as a 16. It just feels like it's evolved with me, all of this stuff about how it can be so cinematic, how it can be so narrative driven, how it's grittier in a whole lot of ways than the original one was, feels like it's come along with me. Like it meets me at my point in life, unlike the original would now, but like the original did when I was a teenager.
Okay, so I'm going to tell a story because people are going to get a huge kick out of it. What started that text between us was I texted you and I said, dude, I like this, but I got to be honest, I cannot stand the cursing. Like, it just does not fit the cursing. And I've now decided that it's not the cursing that bothers me. It's Barrett's insane amount of cursing. Like everybody else I'm cool with, but Barrett is like, dude, shut up. Yeah. Either do you say the planet thing or keep your mouth shut.
Yeah.
Because every other word with Barrett is a curse word. Either that or he's talking about saving the planet. So that's what's bothering. It's not bothering me with everybody else because it's not a lot. With him, it's like he's that guy and then he's Queer Eye Guy, you know? Like he's going back and forth and I cannot stand it. So that's my main thing. The cursing sort of bothers me because, and I think we've talked about this before, I know a lot of people that played that game. I was significantly younger when I played it than when you played it. And I know a lot of people that played that game. And that game is how they not learned to read, but became great readers because there was so much text. And you had to read so much. and cursing was not a thing. Like, yes. That just wasn't there because it was 1990-something, and things were way different than they are now. Yeah. It just wasn't there. And so when I first heard it, it sounded really, really out of place. And when Barrett does it, it still sounds really, really out of place. But everybody else, I'm okay with.
Yeah, I can see that. I agree with just Barrett as a character overall on the execution thing. Similarly, just to piggyback off that point, when I played it through the first time, I've mentioned before, I played it through with a couple of my buddies when we were in high school. And we would take turns, you know, because it's all text, we would just each be a character in the game, you know, that we would be them as we were going through the dialogue. And so each one of us would read different characters' dialogues or whatever. And we played it at one of my buddy's house when we were 14, 15 years old, whatever it was, you know, that like their parents were around pretty regularly. Yeah. And so if there was as much cursing in it as there is in the remake, we would have been in trouble all the time, you know, like it just wasn't a thing. But again, it feels like it's appropriate for me, 36-year-old, playing this game. I'm like, okay, yeah, I would probably be cursing in this situation too. Like, I get it, you know. Like, it makes sense in context.
To finish up that story, the reason I thought your response was funny was that I've known you 15 years, and we talked about it on the show before. I have never in the 16 years that I've known you, I've never heard you curse. I curse a lot. I don't curse on air because that's the way we're taught, but I curse a lot. I've not ever heard you curse. So for that to be your response, I found really, really interesting because that's just not a thing that you do. It's not in your daily life.
Yeah.
And so that was the complete opposite response of what I expected.
Yeah, which is fair. I also mentioned, though, that I've just been watching a lot of TV that has a ton of cursing in it. I've been watching Barry off of HBO because HBO now has all their a lot of stuff for free, which is super nice. I'm able to catch up on some stuff. Barry has so much cursing, you know, like I've just been inundated with it that like Final Fantasy VII actually feels pretty mild, you know, in comparison to the other media that I've been. We've been watching The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel as well, which is a great show that just has tons and tons of cursing in it. And so like it feels pretty mild by comparison at this point. But I actually think it adds to the like feel of the game. Like it makes sense in context of the game.
And I agree for everybody else except Barrett.
100%.
Like I'm fine with it everywhere else except Barrett.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the gameplay elements of the game. The world, we've already mentioned this, but the world is really, really well done. It's not open world, at least not at this point.
Not yet.
It's not open world. We'll see if it gets more open world, but it's big level design. And so in the slums of Sector 7, like there's a lot of exploration to be done. There's lots of places that you can go. And so even though you're still pretty constrained, like it feels like it's feels exponentially larger than the original did. And that's fun just to be able to feel more immersed in the world. There's so many NPCs. You just hear chatter as you're walking around. That's really fun. That again is unique to this versus the original. I'm excited to see more of Midgar, to get to explore more of the city, and I hope it does open up some more. I hope you get some options that you're like traveling back and forth on a train around different parts of the city, all that kind of stuff, because that would be really, really fun. But overall, the world, I just, because it's a familiar world, but now it's like sexy, you know, like now that it looks good, it feels so fresh in that way, which is really nice.
My thing with it is that there's that stuff that you're talking about that is so well put together. And there was one part that I had a problem with because it was so well put together. It's right after they blew up the reactor, and they all separated, and they're all like, okay, meet back at base, and Cryo's trying to get back and trying to save his money, and he's trying to get his money, and it's this dude with this huge sword that should be dragging around, and the whole city's burning, and nobody looks at him and goes, okay, that guy kind of looks like a terrorist. Like, he's just walking around. And then all of a sudden, it just ramps up. Like, I'm like, up to this point, how did somebody not know that that guy might have blown up the reactor? Because do you not see this big sword that he's got? Right. This kind of sword dragging the ground? Like, it for me, it's a continuity thing, and it was kind of weird there for a second, because all of a sudden they're like, holy crap, there's terrorists, and everybody's coming after him.
Yeah, I think that's a really valid point, something that kind of stuck out to me too at a moment with Barrett, but a very similar thing. Whereas in the original game, because the polygonal graphics are what they are, like, Your character models always look a little different than NPCs. I mean, Cloud with his spiky hair or whatever is very distinguishable from NPCs and everything else. But it didn't feel like they were as radically different as the general population as it does in the remake. In that, like, Barrett is just three times the size of any other human being in the game.
Right.
And he has a gun for an arm, you know? Yeah. Like, and everybody else is like just normal looking people in like suits and whatever. And yeah, like, they're on the train after blowing up the reactor, and like, nobody's like, hey, those dudes probably did it, right? Because like, that dude, like you said, has this massive sword that just physics doesn't make any sense about. And then Barrett, being, you know, 12 feet tall and 6 feet wide or whatever, is like, got a gun arm,
and
everybody thought like, hey, maybe it's them.
And the other thing was he's like ranting on the train, like, there's people talking about these people that blew up the reactor. Barrett's just ranting, and I'm like, dude, you just blew it up, shut up. Yeah. Shut up.
Yeah, there's definitely a level of suspension of belief necessary to make sense of it all. Cloud with the Buster Sword, just several times. It's just so much more over the top in the more realistic kind of character models and graphics and everything else than it was in the original. And it was already way over the top in the original. And so,
can I say this, since we're talking about gameplay?
Yep.
One thing that I'm to go the complete opposite direction, two things I noticed. First, you're using tactical mode way more than I thought you would, which makes me smile.
Yes.
It makes me think that I'm actually going to be able to play this with my brand new accessibility controller that's sitting in my house that I can't do anything with. It makes me think that's going to be doable, because you're using the crap out of tactical mode.
Yes.
And so I like that. The other thing is that, have you noticed, and maybe it's just because I want it to be this way, there's not random encounters, but the encounters are split up in a way so that it kind of feels like random encounters. It's like it goes to a cutscene. Then you're like, okay, here comes the soldiers. We fixing a fight. And so it's kind of like, it's not just action all the time. It's like, get a little break, and then here comes some soldiers, and you got to take them out. And, like, I think that's really well done from a gameplay standpoint.
I agree, and I'm not a huge fan of the idea of random encounters for a modern game. I totally get it from, you know, the time of Final Fantasy VII. But what they've done is kind of kept the spirit of that. And also in that, a little bit farther down the line, you'll see that the enemies respawn. And so there was an area I was going through, and I was just like looking for an item to kind of get a key to get to the next place. And I had to backtrack a little bit, and I backtracked, and the enemies were back. I was like, oh, cool. get to fight them again because they respawned, you know. And so instead of random encounters, you know where those fights are going to be because they're all in the same place. And you see them when you're walking up on them. That's obviously a big difference than how it worked in the original, where you would just randomly be in an encounter, thus random encounter, I suppose. You see them coming, and so you can kind of prep a little bit. You can kind of see what you're about to fight, and so you can kind of go, okay, do I need to heal up? Do I need to get prepared for this? Or is this going to be just, you know, a cakewalk kind of thing? And if you want to level, you can level. Like, if you want to grind a little bit, you've got the option to grind a little bit. And so there is that, too, that you can just kind of walk back and forth between where, you know, enemies are respawning. And it still has the spirit of the original in that way. Because, obviously, playing the original game, grinding was part of it. I'm sure hopeful that you don't have to grind a ton in this game, because I don't love that, especially for a 2020 game.
Well,
but I love the spirit of it. I like that there's that same feel that was there in the original.
Let's talk about the grinding for a minute, because one thing I'm having trouble with is there's nothing that I can see that very obviously says when you level up. Watching you play has been interesting because you pause about every 5 minutes. And so you walk a couple steps and then you pause and then you walk a couple steps and then you pause. And like every time you pause, it seems like you picked up a level. And so there's no real obvious thing that I can see that says, hey, you've leveled up. And one of the problems that I kind of have with the HUD, and you probably don't because you have considerably better vision than me, I think. But when you're in a fight and you're taking things out, and when the fight's over, it comes up on the side real quick. Here's what you got out of this. You got some gil and you got some XP and you got some of this stuff. And because the game doesn't have that random encounter thing where it shows you what you got after every fight, I'm having trouble keeping track.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's a change I would like to see made, even if it was an option, because everything just pops up over on the side. And so, like, when you finish a fight, there's like a scroll on the side that, you know, says what items you pick up out of it. And if you leveled up, you know, just it just flashes up there and it flashes away. And so even in just like my play style of like, okay, let's get on to the next thing, or what's happening next, or what's this cutscene that's about to happen. I just miss it all the time. Like, I just don't notice those things out of the corner of my eye. That, especially for leveling, I wish there was a little more fanfare involved, you know, like there was in the original, that like when you leveled up, it felt like something happened. Like,
you got
it felt
that
accomplished.
Music. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got that music, and that's when you went into the menu and you said, okay, what materia have I got? Where are we at on weapons? Like, at this point, even though you had the pause screen, the inventory and all that, I have absolutely no idea how much money you've got. I have absolutely no idea what kind of items you've got, and I can't find a reasonable way to track that short of hitting pause and going into the inventory, which I understand what they were trying to do. They're trying to keep it clean, trying to keep a limited HUD, but I think they kind of went overkill with it.
I agree. Yeah, I would like, especially for items and leveling. Yeah, the money thing, you know, like it pops up when you're at a vendor or whatever, and so you do see it in other places when you need to. And so I have a sense of how much money I have at any given time. But man, I think leveling is the biggest one to me. That just doesn't feel like an accomplishment like it used to. And because of, and this is, it's been so long since I played the original that I don't remember exactly what the leveling process was like in the original. But if I'm remembering correctly, there really wasn't much to leveling in the original. There's not much to leveling in this one either. In the original, it was so much about leveling up your materia. This one has that. The way I understand it so far is that it just happens automatically, that like as you use materia in battle, like it gets points that it'll level up on its own. And then the other side of leveling is that you get skill points. That's the kind of customizable part of the leveling system in the remake. So you get skill points that are assigned to your weapons. And so then based off of what weapon you've been using or whatever, you can go in and use those skill points with that weapon to mod up that weapon, that you get more attack power, you get more HP, or you get more magic resistance, or whatever it is. And each character has a little bit different kind of focus on those things, on those skill points. But that's the process of enhancing your character's stats, other than like the just leveling up gets you more HP, more MP, more attack power, whatever. Then, depending on what weapon you're using and how you've leveled that weapon, you get those bonuses on top of whatever kind of your base character bonus is. Which is fine. You had mentioned before we fired up the mic that the interface isn't great. I agree. The skill points interface just is, it's kind of this very Final Fantasy feeling thing. Like it reminded me of Final Fantasy X, maybe more so.
Yeah, 10.
That it has these kind of little like
nodes.
Yeah, nodes, but not in a way that is connected nearly as well as they were in Final Fantasy X. Like, at least that system I kind of followed. This one just seems really abstract, that there's just nodes, and then you open up, like, a sub-node after a while, and then you can pick things. And it's helpful, obviously, like, you want a level, and it's nice to have that customization to it. It's just the interface feels kind of like an afterthought. The sound effect for it is horrible. I don't know why that sound effect stands out so to me so much, but it's just like this big random sound effect that just doesn't don't feel like fits the game.
The reason why we haven't talked about this at all, and this is part of the reason I have some trepidation, because the rest of the audio in the game is really good.
Yeah.
It's really good. I have 5.1 audio in my room here, and it's I'm glad I've got it because it's good, and so when you have something like that sound effect that really stands out, it really stands out.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. That's well put. It just it's just one system in the game that doesn't feel like it's quite as tight, as refined as I would expect a Final Fantasy game to be at this point. That it feels like something that they always do and that they've always done pretty well in the past. And for whatever reason, for the most legendary game in their catalog, it just didn't quite execute on the remake for whatever reason.
And you know what the funny thing is? We're the only two guys on the planet that care about it.
I imagine you're right.
Seriously, we're the old, like, everybody else looks at that and goes, oh, okay, this is what it is. But we care about that because, especially with the materia and the slots and all that, I'm not going to speak for you, but I spent a ton of time on that kind of stuff. And it's there, but it's not there the way it was.
Yeah. Have you got to the point that we meet, what's the dude's name, Chatterley?
I don't think I'm quite there yet.
So he's the materia guy. He gives you an assess materia, the inspect one, whatever, that you can go into battle and get all the stats on your enemies. And he gives you like this little subquest that's like, use it, and then the more you use it, I can create new materia based off of, you know, this data that you're sending me or whatever. And so you go out and use it, and you come back to him, and he can make a new materia for you at that point. And then each materia has, or I don't know if it's specific to the materia or not, but anyway, you have a bunch of like goals that you need to do of using certain materia for certain things or using a combination of things. So like one is assessing, you know, 15 different enemy types or something like that. And when you do those things, it unlocks either new materia or materia upgrades or that kind of stuff for you, which I actually really dig as a system, as opposed to just having points that feed into it, that it kind of gives you these different goals that you have to meet in order to level those things up to get the better materia options. So that's cool. I ran into a place where I could add materia slots to gear. You can link materia previous slots. And so that I was super pumped about because I just hadn't seen linked materia yet. And that was such a big part of the original of how you link materia in order to make it, you know, combine different things for different purposes. And so the fact that that's still a thing makes me really excited. And so I'm pumped to see how it grows and how it expands. And as just a little thing, so modern games should not be a surprise here, but having played the original and all of the other Final Fantasies just about at some point or another, the fact that, like, when I got a new Cloud, a sword for Cloud that, like, just obviously the Buster Sword is no longer strapped on his back. He has his other sword strapped on his back is super cool. So you get those big, giant weapon designs that you see all the time. But that you can also see the materia in the weapons as you're walking around. The fact that you just get the little glowing orbs and they match the color of whatever materia you have slotted in the weapon just makes me so happy. It's such a minor thing that I just geeked out about, you know? And I'm like, oh, I switched my materia. Now it's like green, green, yellow instead of red, green, red or whatever, you know?
And So let's talk about that. Like, we got to wrap. We're running out of time here. But I have to bring up one small thing on the little stuff. One thing that got me, and I'm just walking into this point, so I haven't really seen this, but something that did not exist in the original that now exists in the remake is that they took the job system from Final Fantasy XII, and it's now in this. There's a job system and side quests and that kind of stuff. And I don't know why, but I'm extremely excited to see how they make that work. Because I didn't, when 12 came out, you and I both sort of kind of played it and went, eh. And I was like, well, the job system's okay. But it kind of fits here. Like, he's a merc and he's trying to make money, and instead of just handing out side quests, you've got this job system that you can do different things with. So I'm interested to see that. And that's another one of those very small things that if they execute it, I think it's gonna be very cool.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And it's a game that I want to see every single inch of, you know, that I want to do every single one of those little things that it gives me to do. And so I that's, you know, in the slums, that's I just spent so far, have spent, still there. So I haven't kind of progressed on the main story path once it opens up for you to kind of progress on that. But I just want to do all those little things. Went around and found all the cats. Like, it's a random little side quest for a little girl to go find all her cats, you know, but I wanted to make sure that I did that just because I want to have that experience in this game. I almost feel like, and maybe this is a good place to wrap so we can at least hit a couple of things, but I almost feel like I have an obligation to, like, do as much as I can in this game, given how long I've been waiting for this specific game. Maybe longer than any other game I can think of that I've known it was coming and was anticipating playing it so much. And now that it's finally here, that I'm like, I can't skim this, you know? Like, I got to do every bit of it.
Let's talk about obligation for a second, because you're playing it. I'm going to buy a copy as soon as you can get here to set me up and rig everything the way it needs to be. Rick, and I'm going to be playing this myself. We have so much to do in this game, in the same room, things that we need to see, things that we need to talk about, things that need to be on video. There's little things that we have to go through that we can't do until we're in the same room. That because we've been waiting on this so long, you're right. We can't skim it. It's very much, if this first section is a 40-hour title, we're gonna get 40 hours out of it.
Yeah.
If we're not gonna rush through it in 25, this is not gonna happen. One thing that I think is interesting, and I thought about this last night as I'm laying in bed watching. Normally, we don't spend a lot of time these days with guides. But as I was watching you play this, I remembered back in the day buying the game And the guy at GameStop says, I got this guide. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
That guide that had the picture, and it was like 300 pages long.
Yep.
And it had the appendix with all the stuff in it, and here's the potions and all that. Like, I kind of want that for this.
Yeah.
Because you're digging around in the slums, and I'm going, I wonder how much stuff he's missing. And I feel like I need, in this day and age, to turn in my gamer card for saying that. But this was the first game that I remember that you bought the guide and you used it. I don't know if you had the guide, but I did.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a little quick story on there. Again, we told you this is what this show is going to be, so here we are. But absolutely, we had the guide too. As I mentioned, I played through it with a couple of my buddies, and so we would switch off. Like one person would be playing, one person would have the guide, and like the other person was like getting food or something. You know, whatever. We had this kind of rotation that we would do. And spoiler alert: if you don't know Final Fantasy VII, big spoiler here. Fast, if you don't know the spoiler, my goodness, what have you been doing your whole life? Anyway, the moment building up to when Ares dies, I was the person with the guide. In that moment, our first playthrough didn't know what was going to happen there. You know, and so I'm like reading ahead a little bit, seeing, you know, like what we're doing. And I was like, oh my God, guys. Oh, this is terrible. You know, they're like, what happens? I was like, I can't tell you. This is bad. This is horrible. You know? And so like, I actually had that moment ruined for me in a way. It's still a super powerful moment, but I experienced it, you know, 3 minutes before we experienced it in the game, because I was following along in the guide of whatever was going on. And it was like, oh no, what? No. I agree with you in a lot of ways. I'm really torn over that fact, because I do want to have it as kind of a true playthrough. And yeah, I don't want to miss anything. So I'm kind of thinking probably like knowing about when we're going to transition sections, of just pulling up a guide really quick and just like doing a quick glance of, okay, did I really hit everything? You know, was there anything big I missed? And if there is, okay, let's go back and grab that really quick.
I really feel like the guide section of it is going to be something, assuming we can get in the same room, the guide section of it is something that we're going to have pulled up on two or three screens here while it's playing on the big screen.
Right.
Just working through it. Like, to me, that's video content, because, like I said, back in the day, the reason that was such a huge deal is that guides existed, but they weren't comprehensive like this one was.
Yes.
Like, I want, for the first time in a long time, for this game, I would love if somebody came out with that big, thick, you know, like, tome. Just like, I would buy it if somebody would come out with the big, thick thing with the pictures.
All the details and all the secrets.
I'd buy that.
Yeah.
And it's because this, to me, is really the first game that was like, you need this.
Yeah.
And I mean, do you agree?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it has a different feel to it today, but because the internet is, everything's there. And this was, as weird as it is to say, this is the days before the internet like this. I mean, we had the internet during Final Fantasy VII, but not where every guide is, you know, like there's a million YouTube walkthroughs of everything, right. You know, like it was just a different world. So,
yeah.
All that said, we're going to talk more about Final Fantasy VII Remake for a while, just anticipated at this point. But do want to mention a few show notes in our last few minutes here before we wrap. The big one being the DualSense controller, the PlayStation 5 controller.
That's an awful name. I'm sorry.
Isn't it? I need more explanation on what's it sensing, because that makes me uncomfortable. I get it that they're like saying, this is not a DualShock. This is not the DualShock 5. This is a new thing. And it is. It's a different design. It's like an Xbox controller and a PlayStation controller had a baby, right? Like, it's set up physically like the shape of an Xbox controller without the offset analog sticks. I'm really anxious about the console design. I, at the end of the day, don't really care what the aesthetics of the console are, but it's a fun thing to talk about, so whatever. I don't love the dual colored, the white and like dark blue / black. I don't know what it is. It looks dark blue to me. I don't dig the look of the controller, and so it makes me think I'm probably not going to dig the look of the console. Again, at the end of the day, who kind of cares? But it's something to talk about when there's nothing else to talk about. What it apparently does have is a built-in microphone, which is pretty cool. That's a handy feature to have. And it has adaptive triggers, which is super cool and something that I think will be a fun utilization in the next gen. And it has haptic feedback, which is also super cool. So just that kind of controller-level immersion that is going to push back on you and move in different ways than a controller has in the past feels like, at least in theory, that it could be really cool. I'm sure the thing's probably comfortable because, again, it looks a whole lot like an Xbox controller, and the Xbox controller is the best controller on the market. So it's probably going to be pretty comfortable. So, it's just weird seeing a different design.
Sounds like, here's us stealing your crap again. Thank you.
Nothing about our controller is unique anyway, so let's just keep it going.
Yeah.
I teased the Nintendo Switch firmware update. The big things that have come with that, one is so fundamental that I'm glad it's here, is button remapping. The fact that you can just map buttons in the firmware or in the software now is huge, and that you can transfer content between SD cards off your system onto SD cards. That seems like such a basic thing to not have until
can
now.
Can you do that on other consoles, the remapping?
Not that I know of. Maybe it's there somewhere. I've never looked. But it seems like a fairly unique thing to the Switch. That's pretty cool.
For a guy that's going to be using the accessibility controller, I love that. I hope everybody adopts that because I'm going to have to remap at some point.
Yeah.
And with it being in all in one box, it's not going to be the easiest thing to plug and unplug and whatnot. I mean, I can, but that's why I haven't used the thing yet. That's because you're not here. Because it's gonna take some work to get it done. So if you can be remapping in software, that's great.
Yeah, a software solution there is sure a lot more elegant than a actual unplugging and plugging in cable solution. Absolutely. Yeah. And then really quick, some free games for you if you're stuck at home looking for something to play if for whatever reason you've already played everything, which God bless you if you have. Sony has made a couple of games available, the Uncharted Collection, and so the first three Uncharted games for you, which are all fantastic, and Journey, both for free, regardless of if you have PlayStation Plus. And so it's not just, you know, kind of like the monthly
I'm
games. It's not added to that, right?
Yeah.
That is free for anybody. So go get the Nathan Drake Collection and Journey, both of which are phenomenal. Stadia is free for a couple of weeks at least, or a couple of months at least, 2 months, I think. So if you haven't tried Stadia, want to try Stadia, it's a perfectly fine system. If you've got decent internet, you can play some really good games on it. They just need more, but for free, why not? And then you can also get Assassin's Creed 2 for free on PC right now, which is a phenomenal game. The first Assassin's Creed was super cool because it was inventive and unique and in this different world, but it had a lot of flaws. Assassin's Creed 2, to me, until the new generation of Assassin's Creed, was the standard of what Assassin's Creed should be. They kind of fell off after Assassin's Creed 2. Assassin's Creed 2 is really, really good. And so you can get that free off of Uplay on PC if you haven't picked that up. Warning, if all you've played is Origins and Odyssey, it's a lot different. it's a very different experience than those are. But it's so good, and the world of Venice and Italy is fantastic, and just, It's super cool. I highly recommend Assassin's Creed 2.
It's good stuff. One of your favorite cities ever, and was your favorite game for quite a while.
It is a very good game. Yeah. Did enjoy that. As far as releases go, not a ton to mention outside of Final Fantasy VII Remake, obviously. Right now, solid 88 on Metacritic. I think that's about right. It's not a perfect game. It has flaws. We'll get more into those, I promise. But I think a high 80s would be about where I would slot the game at this point. So makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
Outside of that, I'm looking on Steam really quick. There's Fallout 76 DLC that I've actually seen a lot of buzz about Wastelanders this year. So if that's your thing, God bless you. Otherwise, Resident Evil 3, I think we mentioned that in the last show. I think that was here on the last show.
Yes.
But that's about it. So two remakes are the big games that are out right now. So for what that's worth.
I am picking up this week probably a Criminal Past DLC from Rankin Divided. I'm going to play that because I've played everything else. It's been fantastic. So I'm probably going to be asking for a little money this week to pick that up. And then I'm going to have to decide what to play next because there's lots of stuff to play. And we got lots of time. So for those of you that think this is going to be over in a week, you're probably going to be in for a little disappointment because I think we're going to be here a while.
Yeah,
so
that's absolutely true.
All of that being said, we gotta go because it's the middle of the workday and he's got places to be. It's my birthday and I don't give a crap, but hey, there's two of us. You know where all the stuff is. You know where the Facebook page is. You know where Twitter is. There's lots of stuff going on the Facebook page. Every time I bring up the Facebook page, there's like six new things. Sam's going crazy because he's like, I got a new system. Woo! And like, it just makes me feel like I just need to go spend $3,000 and get caught up.
Yeah.
So, definitely go check that out. That's really cool. There's always something going on the Twitter. Keep track of the Patreon page because there will be content there. And when there is content there, it's going to be a lot of content. I can promise you that. So definitely keep track of that. We got to say thanks to Duff as we always do. Duff is freaking out about Final Fantasy VII. He doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know how to play it. He doesn't have any idea, but he's loving it.
Yeah.
Real quick. I got to tell you, he sends me a text and he says, dude, I'm really sorry. And I'm like, what are you apologizing for? He's like, I had a whole discussion with Tommy and then I realized I had your number wrong. And so I know you didn't see any of that, but you're going to have to tell me at some point. I know Duff is totally freaking out about Final Fantasy VII and we're having a blast watching that.
Yeah.
So other than that, is there anything else, sir?
I think we're good.
Voicemail line.
509, game 210.
There it is. For right now, I'm Jamie. That's Tommy. We are Gaming Uncensored, and we are out.
Would you like to submit a segment for the show? Send it to gamingUncensored@gmail.com. And don't worry, we'll play just about anything. Gaming Uncensored.